Clare FM's Beyond Belief with Stephen Fletcher.
It's 9 o'clock on Sunday, the 5th of May, 2024. Time for Beyond Belief. Good evening, Stephen Fletcher with you on this bank holiday weekend, and I hope it's all going well for you. As usual, we have another packed programme for you. We have a behind-the-scenes look from our jet-setting correspondent, Colm Flynn, telling us about what he's been doing since we last spoke 3 months ago. We also have the first in a series of Ask the Bishop, where I will be asking Bishop Michael Burrows questions on different aspects of church life here in the Church of Ireland. And of course, I chat to my colleague, Father Jerry Kenny, over a cup of coffee. All that to come with the usual varied mix of music. Let's start with this from Dadannan, The Wren's Nest. Welcome to Beyond Belief. Thank you. Here we are again, and I'm very pleased to be sitting across the table from my friend and colleague, Father Jerry Kenny. And Father Jerry, I am so sorry that last time when you came, knocked on the door of the studio here in Kilrush, I was in the UK.
We've got so used to dialoguing on phones, yeah, and everything like that. And when we had made the arrangement, I presumed that you were here in Kilrush. So I was here knocking on your door when you were actually in the UK, yeah, and we had to do the chat by phone.
And it was raining.
But sure, you know, look at that. I mean, no problem.
No, I'm sorry about that. Obviously, the breakdown in communications, and we're both meant to be good at communications.
Yeah. Well, you see, and that's actually, I think, maybe what we need to chat about this evening, because I'm just after coming from a conference in relation to schools and the communication there. But you've been talking about the fact that you're getting ready now for your synod, and in our church as well, there's preparations going ahead for its synod, which will take place in October. And the whole thing is about communications. That's really what's important.
Yeah, on communications, we had a big meeting yesterday. Because at the moment we've got two dioceses coming together, or they came together 3 years ago, but the process of bringing the different bodies together is ongoing. And one of the big things was the fact that each of these dioceses used to have a diocesan magazine. And these are quite fancy affairs, you know, they're glossy colour productions, 30, 36 pages, something like that. And so we've got this dilemma of how to do it. And they both use, one of them's distributed free, the other one people have to subscribe to. One has, they both have advertising, but one has more advertising than the other, and so it's been very difficult. And we had a big meeting in Ennis in the week, and people came from way up in Mayo and down in Clare and from Limerick and all over, and we think we've got it resolved. We've got a way forward to bring these seemingly two different models for a magazine together.
That's the work of the Spirit. But no, I can fully understand, because I suppose in some small way we're going through that conversation as well in our diocese and in the church as well, especially since we're trying to move from just having a parochial vision into a pastoral area vision. And this week, the bishop has just put up on the diocesan website the synthesis report, which will be going on to Rome for the synod in October. That will be in part two of the synod, and worldwide synod of the Catholic Church. And he has tried to gather in that document the conversations that have been happening in 15 pastoral areas over the Lenten period. Mm. And it's there on the website. And just as you're using your diocesan magazine to communicate, well, I suppose in recent times, it's the diocesan website where the information from the bishops and coordinating is coming down and things like that. But even the conference I was at earlier in the week to do with schools and school management and things like that, like, you know, that's the challenge that's facing all of us, is how do we communicate? And that's what our conference was doing. It was very, very worthwhile, because we had a number of speakers talking to us about new projects and about changes that were happening in management systems and stuff like that. And I suppose in all of those, I'm always conscious from years of experience how maybe changes might be happening at the top, but the dialogue with those of us on the ground is so important. Like that, you know, suddenly it's almost like communicating with your big technological firms, you know, if your phone breaks down or whatever, and you're trying to dialogue and get them to understand the problem you have on the ground, and you're going through that, I've heard.
I'm changing my broadband supplier, and it all should have worked like clockwork. The theory is very good, but it means that I haven't got broadband at the moment.
I know, and it's so frustrating. You're not the only person. I mean, I've two other people in recent weeks where they have the same dilemma, and it would just wear you out trying to talk to some, you know. Well, you feel like you're talking to Mars.
But the problem is, as well, you've got these virtual assistants who are there to help you, and you can get in a loop with it.
it.
And you answer the question, yeah. and it goes down, and another yeah, question, yeah. another question.
And it's all probably artificial intelligence.
Oh, it is. Oh, they say that. Yeah, virtual.
That's working
yeah.
that. You're not actually talking to a person. So that's the world we're going to have to, well, the next generation are going to have to grapple with it. But it's going to be so frustrating, you know.
An old man like me.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the human touch are the particular yeah. things of that. And like, I suppose, a hobby horse of mine has been always, in recent times, like, how over the last 30 years, things have just got so complicated in terms of administration, compliance, all of that yeah. sort of thing, that nobody has sort of pinned down and saying, like, it's like in the school situation, when a circular comes from the department, right, okay, that's fine, and you have to do this, this, and this. But, like, nobody has taken account of the hours that the principal or the management yeah. body has to do to put that into practice.
Yeah.
And it, suddenly it's grown into being what was a simple thing before is now taking yeah. so many hours to do. And nobody's factored that this sort of human resource or human time constraint into the movement of things.
Yeah, it's a growing administrative burden that our parishes are facing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the demographic of our congregations are getting on a bit as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, people don't want to get involved in all this sort of administration, but it has to be done, doesn't
it? It has to be done, yeah.
You know, same problem as in the UK. And they're even talking about employing full-time administrators in some parishes, you know.
Groups. And you see, I suppose, you know, when you look at, stand back and take a look at it, like in all industries and things like that now, and in government level and even local council level, which, you know, people are now beginning to, but like they have been able to increase their staffs and take on all things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But those of us in the voluntary sector,
exactly.
you know, we don't have the wherewithal to do that.
No.
But yet our time has to be absorbed in it, you know.
And you know, we rely on the good nature of people to take up the burden and to do this. But it's getting harder to find people to do that. But anyway, in next weekend, I'm up in Armagh because we have a general synod and it's a countrywide. So it's all of Ireland, Church of Ireland synod, a general synod up in Armagh. Last time it was in Kilkenny. Last year, but every year we have it and we get together, and it's quite a serious, I mean, it's a lot of stuff that gets through on the nod and people giving reports and things, but also it has the ability in theory, and it does happen, for local synods to produce motions that get through the diocesan synod and then get through to general synod to be debated. So, you know, we usually get some private members' motions come up for discussion as well. So it's an interesting time. But as ever with these things, Jerry, like your conference in the week, it's getting together with people face to face.
Exactly. And just listening
exactly.
to the, you know, the dilemma. And you see, you find a common ground because the thing that you're grappling with, well, you suddenly find, well, that's happening as well for other people as well. And there's the support that gives.
That's good.
And maybe you learn from how another person has handled something as well. You know,
I just hope we never get to the stage where we have virtual assistants dealing with pastoral matters. Can you
that won't happen.
Can you imagine confession?
Yeah.
clicking.
Yes. No, that won't happen. Oh, I mean, which is that, like, the human touch we have, I mean, this God-given ability we have to be able to maybe stand back and look at situations. And, I mean, one of the inputs we had at our conference was about a revision of a complaints procedure and the structure around that. And how they've tweaked it and are updating it and things like that. And you see, no artificial intelligence will ever be able to deal with that because it's about grappling with the human dilemma and finding a resolution through that.
Yeah.
It won't be to everybody's satisfaction, but at least the time and energy you have to put into that, which can very often be wearing. But I don't see that a computer is going to solve situations like that.
Personal touch. And thinking of that, you told me when I was back in UK of a funeral of a dear friend of ours. A dear friend of Beyond Beliefs had passed away.
Yeah, Kathleen Flanagan. And, you know, I told the story actually at the funeral, you know, how, you know, Kathleen used to always say to me, oh, you know, you're a great program, we listen every Sunday night. But then she met you, or she heard you actually in a restaurant.
Yeah.
And she recognized your voice. And then she came back to me after the chat she had had with you and she said, Jerry, you were my favorite, but now Stephen is my favorite. So, oh, Kathleen, bless you, and may you rest in peace.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was a lovely time to meet her, and how extraordinary that very wisely Claire FM don't publish my photograph, but my voice speaks for itself, Jerry. And, it's good. And
and always good to have the chat.
It is, yeah. It is, always.
Yeah. And so, we'll continue next week, because, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what the week brings, and we'll get together again.
I'll be in Armagh. So we'll be doing it remotely, I should think.
Lovely. I won't be knocking on your door.
No, make a note. It's a long way to come back to answer it. But Jerry, thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephen.
Well, someone played this song recently from Dusty Springfield from 1966. And I wonder, could it be an ad for a well-known German supermarket? Springfield there doing her weekly shop. Time for this.
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
Well, it can only mean one person and one thing now. We've got Colm Flynn. We managed to nail him to the floor in Rome, and he stopped his flying for a moment, and he's with us this evening. Colm, great to talk to you again.
Hey, Stephen, great to talk to you. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Yeah, I'm back in. I've been doing a bit of travel myself, but only as far as the UK and back. So, you know, I just can't match the range and the extent of your travel.
Stephen, that's what you want people to think, but I know from good sources that you have been spotted lying on a beach in the Bahamas, you've been over in the Caribbean, and then partying in Ibiza. So,
Photoshop is a brilliant tool, isn't it?
Yeah. Living the good life.
You can tell from my tan just how much sunshine we've had here in Ireland, but never mind. Colm, we were last chatting a couple of months ago, I think, and you were about to head off on all sorts. You were doing your stuff for today on RTE, you've done some nationwides, and you've also ventured further afield. You were in Canada, I think. If we go back in time and follow the chronology through, I think you were in Canada after we spoke last time.
Yeah, that's right. We were in Canada producing a program and a series of interviews with the Petersons, the world-famous psychologist, clinical psychologist, Dr. Jordan Peterson, and his wife, Tammy Peterson. And I think we spoke about this before, his wife converting to the Catholic Church. And a few months ago, I went to Toronto and I interviewed her about her incredible story of being diagnosed with a terminal cancer back 5 years ago and being told then that she had only 10 months to live. And yet 5 years later, here we are and she's fully cured. So this incredible journey led her on a spiritual path towards the Catholic Church. And she told me when I met her first a few months ago, I'm going to enter the Catholic Church on Easter Sunday. That's when I'll convert and be confirmed. So I asked her, well, can we come back with the camera crew and document when this happens? And she graciously said yes. And so we went back to Canada, the land of the maple leaf, and we interviewed her. We filmed the Mass, the Easter Vigil, on the Saturday night, saw her entering the church, got her reaction, interviewed her very famous husband, and I think it was 4 million people watched it.
Yeah.
And all over the world. Goodness, so it was it's a story of hope and of, you know, and it was incredible because, Stephen, it mirrored the Easter message of life overcoming death, of hope and love winning, of Jesus on the cross, of new beginning, of rebirth, of new life. You could kind of see that in her life in a way, that she was told she was going to die. She felt empty inside. She had nowhere to turn. It was game over. And yet now she has this new lease on life and she's been reborn in a way.
Yeah.
Not just coming into the church, but just she's living a healthy life. She's closer with her family and her friends. It's turned her life around.
Very good. Yeah. And as you say, you got millions and millions of views. And I don't think our podcasts, my podcasts, get quite as many as that. But we're working on it.
I was going to correct you, Stephen, and say she got the millions of views, not me. People don't tune in to see me. People tune in to see the person that I'm sitting across from. So yeah. I'm lucky because they are so good and they're so welcoming and opening to me. They're the people who open up and are so honest and vulnerable with their story, and that's why millions of people watch. So yeah. I'm just a little instrument of that.
You're just a tool.
I'm just a tool of that. You couldn't get a handful of people to tune in to watch me, Stephen.
we know that's not true, because RTE grab you whenever they can.
Yeah. I get the call.
Yeah. Well, it's a bit like us, you know, when we're stuck. Who do you call? Colm Flynn.
Colm Flynn, and here I am. Wheel him up.
Anyway, yeah, so after Canada, you came back to Rome for a short while, did you? And then you're off again. Where did you go after that?
After that, we went back here. We came back here to Rome for a few days, and then we traveled to Munich in Germany. That was a job for Swedish radio, a broadcasting conference looking at the state of radio across the continent of Europe. It's the biggest broadcasting conference in Europe, and they have it every year, and I've been working at it for the past 10 years. So it's organized by NRK, SR, and DR. They're the Norwegian, Swedish, and Danish public broadcasters.
Right.
They're equivalent of RTE in those countries. The three of those countries came together and they said, hey, we see numbers declining when it comes to radio listenership. Let's all pool our ideas and our resources and our talent and come up with ideas. So they organized this conference, but now as it's gotten bigger and bigger, they need more people. And 10 years ago, it was in Dublin, and RTE, it's a bit like the Eurovision, RTE was the host broadcaster.
Yeah, it was in Cork, wasn't it?
It wasn't in Cork, it was in the convention centre in Dublin,
oh, right.
Unless you're thinking of another conference.
Another conference.
So maybe that must have been a separate thing that was happening in Cork.
Okay.
Stephen, you go to these very highfalutin things that are
I got a free ticket.
There you go. And was it good? Did you learn something? Did you take something
from it?
I did, it was
good. So it was interesting anyway, very, very.
But it's great because you then listen to how our colleagues at ABC, the public service broadcaster in Australia, or CBC in Canada, you would hear how they do things, and then you can take it and apply it to Claire FM and to the show, and to, you know, how does Beyond Belief engage with the listeners and
Yeah, no.
So it's fantastic.
I'm a great supporter of, you know, coming together with people, and particularly coming together in person.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
To actually press the flesh, as the Americans say, and actually meet up with people, because I think that's very valuable as well.
And so it's good. As you say that, we're looking at each other through a screen here. I can see you on my big screen in front of me.
I'm glad I'm on the big screen and not in a little sort of a little postage stamp size one.
No, and for those of you who are listening,
yes,
you're missing out because you don't get to see the handsome Stephen Fletcher in front of me now.
We said before we were going to try and get some video podcasts. I did something with my bishop, a little 15-minute podcast, and I got the audio okay because I recorded that here, but I found I hadn't got the rest of it, and I haven't admitted to him yet, but I hadn't pressed the record button. Basic error, but I was flustered because he came to me earlier than I thought, and I was stuck, and I got going and I set everything up and didn't hit the record button. But don't tell him.
You know
him.
What? I won't tell him. That's our secret. That's between you and me. So.
And the millions of listeners who will tune in to see you.
Yeah, we'll be waiting.
But I have pressed record now, so I know I will have your video and my video. Never mind. Thank you, Colm. And just shows the technology and the skill that goes into this sort of thing. You know, it takes hours of prep, doesn't it?
It's great.
You went to Munich, and I saw the video. That was a good video that you did promoting, you know, and interviewing people. I saw some from the BBC, who I know of, and other people as well. So it was good. So after Munich, you came back to Rome, and what were you doing then?
And then after a little while in Rome, covering things at the Vatican, I went to the south of France, to La Bérue, to a monastery, St. Madeleine's Benedictine Monastery, and I was making a program for the BBC, which is going out in a few weeks, and that's a full half-hour show. I found it fascinating to be there with these men who normally are not open to the outside world. They live a cloistered life, meaning that they're there dedicating each and every day to prayer and to work and giving glory to God. So to be given permission by the Father Abbot to go and not only stay with them for a few days, but also to get to interview some of these monks who live in silence. And the main monk I interviewed, Father Basil, I think you heard a bit of him on Beyond Belief last week. He has been living in silence for 45 years. So for him to be sitting down talking to me for an hour was one thing. But to have microphones in front of him for the BBC world audience, but in the monastery, it's a life of extremes. So in the world today, everything is focused on the individual. It's kind of this hyper individualism. How many followers do you have in social media? What's your career? You go to America and the first thing they say is, what do you do? Or are you famous? You know, we focus on the self, my truth, this new phrase that was coined by Oprah Winfrey, my truth. And these monks live a life that is completely opposite. They wear that brown habits. They shave their heads. They take away anything that it roots them in ego or excessive individualism. And they live for the community. Everything is about the community of their brothers and giving glory to God. And so that was a challenge for me when I was interviewing them, because I would go to them in the vineyard where they produce wine. And I would say, hey, can I ask you a quick question? Those who were permitted to talk to me. First of all, for the record, as I ask everybody when we do an interview, can you just tell me your name, please? And they would say, oh, my name's not important. One monk said to me, he laughed, I'm Brother Wine Grower. That's my name. And I said, why won't you tell me your name? He said, my name's not important. I'm here, a simple, humble monk doing work for God.
Yeah.
All glory to God, no glory to me. He didn't want his name on the radio.
No, completely opposite from 4 million viewers or anything like that. But I'm sure it will be of great interest to World Service listeners.
Yeah, and it's a way of life. And that's the key ingredient of great programs, I think, on radio. And when you look at a radio station like the BBC World Service, is how can we, for 30 minutes, take our listeners and transport them into a way of life that they would never normally encounter. And we do that through, of course, sound effects. We record when we're there all the sounds of the bells at the monastery and the birds chirping outside, the wine being poured, the fire blazing at night in the abbey. But then what's key to that is those interviews with the monks who we have to try and build a relationship with over the short period of time that I'm there, and get them to open up as much as we can and share their stories, and kind of not trick them, but you make them feel that they're just talking to me, that they're just chatting to me about their story, whereas in actual fact, millions of people will be listening across the globe on the, on the BBC.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Well, exciting. And did you sample their produce?
I was drinking wine morning, noon and night, Stephen, for 3 days when I was there. All in the name of research, of course.
And even that didn't loosen their tongues. You know, they were still silent, even with a drink or two.
Well, you know what? It could have loosened their tongues, but I added so much wine, I probably wasn't hitting the right buttons. I did like what you did with the bishop. I was probably hitting rewind when I should have been pressing record, and I was cross-eyed by the end of the 3 days. But I have to point out, of course, it was all on the house. The monks gave me the wine. It wasn't on a BBC tab or an RT tab. Actually, it will be on RT Radio 1 as well in a few weeks on the History Show.
Oh, very good.
Because there's a fantastic historical connection as well. The monastery where they are near Avignon in the south of France in Le Bru, it was the site of the first papal vineyard back in the 14th century. Because everyone associates the Pope with Rome, where I'm sitting at the moment in the Vatican. But because of civil unrest and war during, I think it was 1308, 1309, the Pope, Pope Clement V, he was French. He said, I've had enough of this. I'm leaving Rome, keeping the papacy, but I'm bringing it to the south of France. So he brought the whole papacy to France, and it remained there for a few popes after that. So when you have a papal palace, you need papal wine. So they started that 600 years ago. And these monks now are continuing that tradition. So in honor of them, Stephen, I had to have a few glasses, you know?
I fully understand and appreciate. Good. So you came back from there in a bit of a state by the sound of it. And did you go to sleep for a few days in Rome, or have you been off since?
We had a little bit of a sleep, and now the program has been put together for the BBC. And we're focusing on more trips coming up. In a week, we are going to New York and Washington, D.C. And then straight on off the back of that, we're going to Kenya and Uganda. So we'll be hitting the U.S. and then we'll be coming back to Rome for 3 days and then going down south to Africa. And then after that, we'll be looking forward to the Pope's big trips later this year. He's announced his longest papal journey since he became Pope. He'll be gone for, I think it's 10, 12, 13 days. He's going to Singapore, to Papua New Guinea, and a few other spots as well. I think it's four cities he's hitting, four different countries in one trip. So we have to now work out logistically how are we going to cover that, because normally the team and I would go to a country that he's visiting a week or two beforehand and spend a lot of time on the ground interviewing people and getting to know the Catholic Church there. But with so much ground to cover, we have to figure out, do we focus on two of the four countries? Do we go to all four for a shorter period of time? We're trying to figure out now logistically, and that won't break the bank, how we're going to going to cover this. But it'll be a remarkable trip if he indeed does it.
If he's well enough, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, he's 87 or so, isn't he?
He's 87 and he's been in and out of hospital a few times, even just this year alone. And last year he had scheduled a big trip to Dubai for the climate conference, the COP20, I forget the full title of it, the COP conference, COP29 or whatever it was. So he had to cancel that at the last minute, and that was to go meet lots of world leaders. So we will see. This is a very ambitious trip. It's a long way to get there, even to the other side of the world, close to Australia. And then because it's so many days, it'll be a grueling trip. And at 87, will it happen? We'll see.
The other
thing is Argentina. He has not been home to Argentina. And for the past 2 years, he's been saying, nope, I'm definitely going. I'm going to go. And in interviews, people keep putting it to him. Holy Father, you came from Buenos Aires. Since becoming Pope in 2013, you have not gone home. Why have you not gone back to see your people, and when are you planning to do so? So we thought that we would have that in the schedule, because everyone needs time to prepare for these trips. The country needs time to implement security, to build the big altars that he'll be saying public masses at. There's like a lot of logistics that go into a papal visit. And the fact that he hasn't set a date or hinted a month even when he could go to Argentina, but he is able to schedule in Singapore and Papua New Guinea, it's just, we don't know why. I was going to say reluctance. I don't know if he is reluctant, but it seems some commentators say he is reluctant to go home. Why that is?
No. And I must say that at the moment, I think, look out for him. Bishop Michael Burrows, Bishop of Chilham, Limerick and Killaloe, the Church of Ireland bishop, that is my bishop, is in Rome at the moment, and I think with the Archbishop of Dublin. Say hello to him from me if you happen to bump into him around there.
That would be great to see him here. I'll have to check with the on the Vatican things that we're approved to go to and cover, if it's one of the events that we're going to go in and cover, to have the accreditation.
Oh, good. No, well, it'd be interesting. And so, Bishop Michael Burrows, look out for him and tell him hello from me.
Hello from Stephen Fletcher and Clare FM. And
Stephen Fletcher, his diocesan communications officer.
Of course, yes. And if you need to do an interview with him, he's more than welcome to use the studio so he could talk to you direct from Rome. That would be cool.
Thank you. Good. So you've got plenty planned, plenty of jet setting. You're not slowing down or taking any. Every time I say to you, come on, you know, you've got to start slowing down. Very good. Well,
I keep saying to myself, I'm going to slow down now. I'm going to slow down. Yeah. And then my boss will ring me or a producer at the network and say, hey, we have this interview opportunity in Angola. Do you want to go and interview? And I say, yes, that's great. I would love to interview that person. I can't help myself, Steve, but I love it. It's a blessing. When you love, just as you do, when you love what you do,
exactly.
It doesn't feel like work. You put up with the flights and the hotels.
And so you're going to work it that you'll also do Spanish versions of these big interviews that you do and these big projects and video projects. You're not thinking of planning a Spanish version? You know, if only you knew someone who could speak fluent Spanish.
Yes, my beautiful girlfriend, Paula Arriaza, we're just celebrating 1 year of dating now. And I know that you've met her before.
Yeah.
And of course, you charmed her. And now she's always asking, how's Stephen? When I mention I'm going to the interview, how is Stephen? How is he?
Good.
And she's great. She's covers everything. She does kind of similar what I do, focuses on the Vatican, and she covers it for Telemundo, a big Spanish-speaking network in the US.
Mm.
So she's going strong, and maybe might be changing network soon. Might be coming over to do more similar stuff than what I do. But at the moment, she's doing it for this television in Latin America and the US, Telemundo. But she loves what we do at EWTN, so maybe someday she'll make a switch and come
good,
over.
Good, good. Well, I look forward to seeing you in Ennis as ever. You know, let me know when you're back, and I'm indebted to you, so I'm sure I could a cup of coffee or a couple of biscuits should cover it. But I'm sure we can come to some arrangement, and it'd be great to see you and Paolo, of course, when you're next over in Ennis. Is that fitting into your schedule at all?
Not at the moment. The next trip will be Dublin for a day en route to New York next week. And then I'm going to El Salvador because she's from El Salvador to visit her family again. And my parents, Tom and Noreen, Mom and Dad, and my uncle James, Father James, he's going to come over as well. So we're all going to fly over to El Salvador this July. So we'll have a nice week over there with her family.
Very good.
So it's exciting times.
It is. And in July, our younger daughter is getting married back in the UK. So it'll be exciting for that as well on the 6th of July.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
Stephen, you are having a ball and you deserve it all.
Yeah, it's very good, and we're very happy for them, and he's a lovely guy. So,
Now's the time. Yeah. Well, that's good.
Good. So, Colm, as ever, thank you so much, and safe travels. And as ever, it's always a great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much,
Stephen. My pleasure, and thank you so much for having me on again.
Thank you. Well, with all this talk of weddings and families coming together to meet their future in-laws, here's Minnie Riperton, Loving You.
Loving you is easy 'cause you're beautiful. Making love with you is all I wanna do. Loving you is more than just a dream come. Is out of love and you. La 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 la. No one else can make me feel the colors that
is filled with love and you. Love and you. I see your soul come shining through. And every time that we, ooh, I'm more in love with you. La 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 la. Stay with me while we grow old, and we will live each day in springtime. 'Cause loving you is easy, 'cause you're beautiful, and every day of my life is filled with loving you. Loving you. I see your soul come shine through, and every time that we, ooh, I'm more in love with you.
Things I thought would be interesting is to have a series of short interviews with my bishop, Bishop Michael Burrows, talking about aspects of our church and church life, a sort of bishop's question time. So last week this began when I sat down with Bishop Michael and asked him this question. Where should we start? Because I'm aware that for the people sitting in the pews and people outside our churches, some of these terms seem rather odd. I'm thinking particularly when I fill in my form for my travel expenses. I don't fill in a form for travel expenses, I fill in a form for locomotory expenses. You know, why do we hang on to these odd names?
Well, Stephen, it's lovely to be talking to you as always, and I look forward to this series of conversations which will unfold from time to time. And you've started in a good place because the church, like any institution, inevitably develops over time a certain in-house technical language. That's necessary in a world where we have particular concepts, some of which are theological, that we need to explain and convey to the world as part of what we are. But we cross a line into inaccessibility and esotericism when that magnifies into using language for no particular reason, I sometimes think, that the world cannot readily get, and which actually almost shuts the world out. They think we're talking in a sort of secret code that you couldn't possibly understand, so you wouldn't have a clue what was going on if you joined that lot. I remember somebody rather frivolously saying to me once, you know, I have to say, I am not a frequenter of turf accountants and of what goes on inside them, and I don't understand any of the language of turf accountancy. But somebody said to me once, if you've never been in a church and you're wondering will you go in and comprehend what they're at and get even the basic language, it's about as difficult as for the likes of you to go into a betting shop and know what to do. I think rather frivolously there's truth in that.
Absolutely.
So coming back to your remark about locomotory, it's a classic example of the church using sort of revered antique language without examining why. It's a long time since on the railways, and you know how much I love railways. People have sort of stopped talking about steam locomotives. But in connection with travel expenses in the church for those involved in various categories of ministry, yes, we don't use the simple phrase travel expenses. We talk about putting in your locomotory claim. I suppose some of these things in a way are funny and give a sense of history, but funniness is an enemy of mission when people people think it's just being exclusive for the sake of it.
Yeah, and you wonder, I mean, is there a great movement to keep these traditional names, or is it all part of our tradition and we should be proud of it? Or why don't we just use everyday language?
I think it's sort of unexamined assumptions to some extent. Yes, tradition and proud of it, you're right. I don't wish to cast aspersions on other professions. I've already mentioned turf accountancy, but my wife is a member of the bar, and I go along as a tag-along spouse to many legal functions, and I notice again, you know, they live inevitably in a professional world that is governed by phrases and turns of language that I don't easily understand, and of course they tend to use them fairly uncritically because that's their lingua franca. But like the courts, which are meant to be about dispensing justice in public and therefore comprehensively, so also the church is about worshipping God in public. We talk about public worship, and therefore the public should find it not, as it were, instantly elementary, because there's a lot of complexity in liturgy and theology, but it certainly shouldn't find us using obscure language for the sake of it, because that's obscurantism rather than depth, and there is a difference.
Yeah, and also, I mean, there are so many other names. You know, we have a select vestry, whereas I'm used to, in Church of England, we have a PCC, a parochial church council, but, you know, select vestry and Easter vestry and things like that.
Our friends of the Roman Catholic tradition have pastoral councils. People have a fair idea of what they are, but the select vestry goes back to a time when the committee of lay people that helped to run the parish literally met in the vestry, the room of the church where clergy put on their vestry, which is also a convenient office space, and because they met there it became known as the vestry, and because a group of them were elected as representatives they became the select vestry. You know, I mean, in a way it's fun explaining these things, because the very explanation of them can have a teaching element, but on the other hand, as I say, where things become unnecessarily obscure, that's only just wasting our time explaining things.
Yeah. I don't know. Can you think of any other phrases or names that may prove to be incomprehensible to the general public?
There are some that I laugh at. I'm quite a lover of liturgy, as you know, and there are various phrases we clergy use in the course of liturgy that we never stop to explain. For example, at the Eucharist, there's usually a hymn or other piece of music between the Epistle and the Gospel. The person leading the worship says, "We will sing the gradual hymn," and gives out the number. I don't believe 99% of people know what gradual is about or have any reason to do so. The reason is that in Latin, gradual comes from gradus, a step, and in the ancient liturgy, the priest used, or the deacon used, to go up a step to read the gospel from a higher level to give it greater significance. But who knows that now, and how many of our churches are choreographed for that sort of visible ascending? In fact, it's much more likely nowadays that the reader of the gospel will go down amongst the people to proclaim the gospel, so they're not going up a step at all, but we still sing the gradual hymn because we always did.
Yeah. One of the one of those traditions that we all use, and we just don't think that some people probably haven't got a clue why they're called that, but
one can't reduce divine truth and as it were, liturgical and spiritual complexity entirely to monosyllables. Inevitably, the language of theology, the language of worship, will have to be resort to phrases that encapsulate depth, sometimes in language that is challenging. All I'm talking about here is the unnecessary use of technical jargon to, as it were, separate searching people from the real message.
Yeah, that's right, and it's perhaps it's a chance for DLK, the Diocese of Tuam, Limerick and Killaloe, to strike out and remove these confusing titles, really. I mean, we all know what they mean, or we know where they come and we know what we do when we hear these phrases. But on the other hand, perhaps the new people coming in, which we're always looking to do, perhaps we could do with just changing some of that.
Well, I'll give you an example of where language in rich variety is helpful. We've talked about funny things like locomotory, where it may be amusing but not necessarily helpful, but sometimes rich variety of language requiring a measure of explanation is helpful. For example, the meal that we share in Christ's name in obedience to his command in the upper room at the Last Supper can be called Holy Communion, the Eucharist, the breaking of bread, the Lord's Supper, or even by many Anglicans, the Mass. And all those words shed, as you elucidate them, a different spotlight on its rich meaning. And therefore, when I prepare candidates for confirmation, I always say this service is known by many names, and all of them help us to understand better an important aspect of what we're doing together. It is so rich, no one name will suffice. That is good use of language, as opposed to obscure use of language. So if you talk about the Eucharist, you're talking about joyful thanksgiving, that sort of celebratory aspect. If you're talking about the breaking of bread, you're emphasizing fellowship and the need to remember the poor. If you're talking about Holy Communion, you're talking about how in the breaking of the bread we are brought closer to each other and to God in a very profound way. If you talk about the Mass, a word people are nervous about in the Church of Ireland for no reason really, except that they think it's a word which should be respectfully left to others. But Mass is simply a reminder that that word in Latin means being sent out, and at the end of the Eucharist, at the end of the Mass, you are formally sent out to do God's work in the world because the Eucharist is strengthening us for mission. So these are words that are good to use, and where I'd encourage variety of language and lack of nervousness surrounding language, but perhaps we could talk more richly about the Eucharist and less frequently about the locomotory.
Yeah. Yes, no, thank you. Thank you. Well, I think that's very useful. Certainly, the gradual hymn was an explanation that I hadn't heard before, so I thank you for that. But these series that we're going to be doing, I think if people would like to send in their questions to me, comms, COMMS at TLK.ie, and we can perhaps delve a little deeper into the great mystery that is the Church of Ireland and how we conduct ourselves and perhaps the language we use, but perhaps some of the services that we take and things like that. So thank you very much, Bishop, for being with us for this first one, and we've hopefully sorted out the technical problems, and we will look forward to future ones. And so
I'll just make one final point before we finish, which often strikes me. A lot of these words in churchy life, and it is so across the ecumenical spectrum, very much so in the Roman Catholic Church, come from an age where education assumed classical education. I'm probably old enough to be the last vestiges of that tradition. I worked through and indeed enjoyed Latin throughout my secondary school years. That, in effect, with a few exceptions, is entirely gone now. And therefore, the assumption of Latinity in, as it were, people who are well-educated is something that it is foolish now to make, and yet you'll have noticed how often in this conversation I had to explain what somebody meant in Latin. And that's a kind of basic problem about what the Church assumed education to be about until relatively recently. We've got to get our minds round well-educated people having a rich variety of education in the scientific and the technical area, as well as in the traditional church disciplines, and make the best use of that education so that we import language that comes from the scientific sector more into helping us pursue our knowledge of God. If you look at the prayer book, you'll see that the only thing that is required of candidates for ordination in the canon law, the only thing, is being found learned in the Latin tongue. And nobody's changed that since the 16th century, but I don't think excellent knowledge of Latin would really on its own help you hugely with ministry today.
No, no, no. And you don't test candidates as to their ability in Latin before you accept them. But, well, thank you. Thank you, Bishop. That's very interesting. And I'll just say again, any other queries and questions that people have, this will be an opportunity for them to bring them forward. And as I say, we will regularly do these short 15-minute or so packages. And my email address, again, is comms@tlk.ie. Thank you very much,
Stephen,
indeed.
Stephen, I'd say one last thing.
Oh.
This might be relevant. Could you want people to send in their queries, and so do I. This is a kind of online version of something I'm trying to do at every confirmation. That instead of me trying to think of what the candidates would like me to preach about, I ask the candidates to send me in advance of the service through the clergy questions that have come up for them in their preparation and that they'd like me to face head on in the sermon at confirmation services. It means I know what they're thinking about, what interests them. They ask profound questions, and it works really well in making confirmations a kind of a dialogue of ideas. And perhaps this is another way of doing that.
Yeah, very good. Well, thank you very much.
Thank
I won't
you.
Give my address again, but just to say all communications are very welcome. Thank you, Bishop. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.
Well, as the day and the program draw to its close, here's James Taylor.
Well, the sun is surely sinking down, but the moon is slowly rising. So this old world must still be spinning around, and I still love you. So close your eyes, you can close your eyes, it's all right. I don't know no love songs, and I can't sing the blues anymore, but I can sing this song, and you can sing this song when I'm gone. It won't be long before another day, we gonna have a good time, and no one's gonna take that time away. You can stay as long as you like. So close your eyes, you can close your eyes, it's all right. I don't know no love songs, and I can't sing the blues anymore, but I can sing this song, and you can sing this song when I'm gone.
James Taylor leading us gently to the end of our programme. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. It just wouldn't have been the same without you. Thanks to Colm Flynn, our Vatican correspondent, Bishop Michael Burrows from the Church of Ireland for answering some questions in our question time slot, and Father Jerry Kenny for joining me for our coffee and chat. Don't forget, you can listen again by going to the Clare FM website and clicking on the catch-up tab, and you can join Father Jerry for Sunday prayer at 7:45 next Sunday morning. Until then, this is Stephen Fletcher wishing you a joyful and a peaceful week ahead and a good bank holiday weekend. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Slán agus Spanacht.